5. Ideals. The sign on the wall proposed a greater danger even than its deadline. To foresee the future is of the void bringers. From the Journal of Navani Kolin, Yesesus, 1174.
Toward victory and, at long last, vengeance. The crier carried a writ with the king's words on it, bound between two cloth-covered boards, though she obviously had the words memorized. Not surprising. Kaladin alone had made her repeat the proclamation 3 times. Again, he said, sitting on his stone beside Bridge 4's fire pit. Many members of the crew had lowered their breakfast bowls, going silent. Nearby, Sigzil repeated the words to himself, memorizing them. The crier sighed. She was a plump, light-eyed young woman with strands of red hair mixed in her black, bespeaking Baden or Horn-Eater heritage. There would be dozens of women like her moving through the war camp to read and sometimes explain Dalinar's words. She opened the ledger again. In any other battalion, Kaladin thought idly, its leader would be of a high enough social class to outrank her. Under the authority of the king, she said, Dalinar Kolin, High Prince of War, hereby orders changes to the manner of collection and distribution of gem hearts on the Shattered Plains. Henceforth, each gem heart will be collected in turn by 2 High Princes working in tandem. The spoils become the property of the king, who will determine, based on the effectiveness of the parties involved and their alacrity to obey, their share. A prescribed rotation will detail which High Princes and armies are responsible for hunting gem hearts and in what order. The pairings will not always be the same and will be judged based on strategic compatibility. It is expected that by the codes we all hold dear, the men and women of these armies will welcome this renewed focus on victory and, at long last, vengeance. The crier snapped the book closed, looking up at Kaladin and cocking a long black eyebrow he was pretty sure had been painted on with makeup. Thank you, he said. She nodded to him, then moved off toward the next battalion square. Kaladin climbed to his feet. Well, there's the storm we've been expecting. The men nodded. Conversation at Bridge 4 had been subdued, following the strange break-in at Dalinar's quarters yesterday. Kaladin felt a fool. Dalinar, however, seemed to be ignoring the break-in entirely. He knew far more than he was telling Kaladin. How am I supposed to do my job if I don't have the information I need? Not 2 weeks on the job, and already the politics and machinations of the Light Eyes were tripping him up. The High Princes are going to hate this proclamation, Leighton said from beside the fire pit, where he was working on Beld's breastplate straps, which had come from the quartermaster with the buckles twisted about. They base pretty much everything on getting those gem hearts. We're going to have discontent aplenty on today's winds.
Ha!
Rock said, ladling up curry for Lopin, who had come back for seconds.
Discontent? Today this will mean riots. Did you not hear that mention of the codes? This thing, it is an insult against the others, whom we know do not follow their oaths.
He was smiling, and seemed to consider the anger, even rioting, of the High Princes to be amusing.
Moash, Dre, Mart, and Eth with me, Kaladin said. We've got to go relieve Scar and his team. Teft, how goes your assignment?
Slowly, Teft said. Those lads and the other bridge crews, they have a long way to go. We need something more, Cal. Some way to inspire them.
I'll work on it, Kaladin said. For now, we should try food. Rock, we've only got 5 officers at the moment, so you can have that last room on the outside for storage. Kolin gave us requisition rights from the camp quartermaster. Pack it full.
Full?
Rock asked, an enormous grin splitting his face.
How full?
Very, Kaladin said. We've been eating broth and stew with soulcast grain for months. For the next month, Bridge 4 eats like kings.
No shells now,
Mart said, pointing at Rock as he gathered his spear and did up his uniform jacket.
Just because you can fix anything you want, it doesn't mean we're going to eat something stupid.
They're sick lowlanders, Rock said. Don't you want to be strong?
I want to keep my teeth, thank you, Mart said. Crazy horn-eater.
I will fix two things,
Rock said, hand to his chest as if making a salute.
One for the brave, and one for the silly. You may choose between these things.
You'll make feasts, Rock, Kaladin said. I need you to train cooks for the other barracks. Even if Dalinar has extra cooks to spare now with fewer regular troops to feed, I want the bridgemen to be self-sufficient. Lopin, I'm assigning Dabit and Shen to help you assist Rock from here on out. We need to turn those 1,000 men into soldiers. It starts the same way it did with all of you, by filling their stomachs.
It will be done,
Rock said, laughing, slapping Shen on the shoulder as the parshman stepped up for seconds. He'd only just started doing things like that and seemed to hide in the back less than he once had.
I will not even put any dung in it.
The others chuckled. Putting dung in food was what had gotten Rock turned into a bridgeman in the first place. As Kaladin started out toward the king's palace, Dalinar had an important meeting with the king today. Sigsel joined him.
A moment of your time, sir,
Sigsel said quietly.
If you wish. You promised me that I could have a chance to measure your particular abilities.
Promised? Kaladin asked. I don't remember a promise.
You grunted.
I grunted?
When I talked about taking your measurements, you seemed to think it was a good idea, and you told Scar we could help you figure out your powers.
I suppose I did.
We need to know exactly what you can do, sir. The extent of the abilities, the length of time the Stormlight remains in you. Do you agree that having a clear understanding of your limits would be valuable?
Yes, Kaladin said reluctantly.
Excellent. Then,
give me a couple of days, Kaladin said. Go prepare a place where we can't be seen. Then, yes, all right. I'll let you measure me.
Excellent, Sigsel said. I've been devising some experiments.
He stopped on the path, allowing Kaladin and the others to draw away from him. Kaladin rested his spear on his shoulder and relaxed his hand. He frequently found his grip on the weapon too strong, his knuckles white. It was like part of him still didn't believe he could carry it in public now, and feared it would be taken from him again. Syl floated down from her daily sprint around the camp on the morning winds. She alighted on his shoulder and sat, seeming lost in thought. Dalinar's war camp was an organized place. Soldiers never lounged lazily here. They were always doing something. Working on their weapons, fetching food, carrying cargo, patrolling. Men patrolled a lot in this camp. Even with the reduced army numbers, Kaladin passed 3 patrols as his men marched toward the gates. That was 3 more than he'd ever seen in Sadeus's camp. He was reminded again of the emptiness. The dead didn't need to become voidbringers to haunt this camp. The empty barracks did that. He passed one woman, seated on the ground beside one of those hollow barracks, staring up at the sky and clutching a bundle of masculine clothing. 2 small children stood on the path beside her. 2 silent. Children that small shouldn't be quiet. The barracks formed blocks in an enormous ring, and in the center of them was a more populated part of camp, the bustling section that contained Dalinar's living complex, along with the quarters of the various High Lords and Generals. Dalinar's complex was a mound-like stone bunker with fluttering banners and scuttling clerks carrying armfuls of ledgers. Nearby, several officers had set up recruitment tents, and a long line of would-be soldiers had formed. Some were sellswords, who had made their way to the shattered plains seeking work. Others looked like bakers or the like, who had heeded the cry for more soldiers following the disaster.
"Why didn't you laugh?"
Syl said, inspecting the line as Kaladin hiked around it, on toward the gates out of the war camp.
"I'm sorry," he replied. "Did you do something funny I didn't see?"
"I mean earlier,"
she said.
"Rock and the others laughed. You didn't. When you laughed during the weeks things were hard, I knew that you were forcing yourself to. I thought maybe once things got better—"
"I've got an entire battalion of bridgemen to keep track of now," Kaladin said, eyes forward, "and a High Prince to keep alive. I'm in the middle of a camp of widows. I guess I don't feel like laughing.
But things are better, she said, for you and your men. Think of what you did, what you accomplished.
A day spent on a plateau, slaughtering. A perfect melding of himself, his weapon, and the storms themselves. And he'd killed with it. Killed to protect Alight Eyes.
He's different, Kaladin thought. They always said that.
I guess I'm just waiting, Kaladin said.
For what?
The thunder, Kaladin said softly. It always follows after the lightning. Sometimes you have to wait, but eventually it comes. Syl zipped up in front of him, standing in the air, moving backward as he walked. She didn't fly, she didn't have wings, and didn't bob in the air. She just stood there, on nothing, and moved in unison with him. She seemed to take no notice of normal physical laws. She cocked her head at him.
I don't understand what you mean. Drat. I thought I was figuring this all out. Storms? Lightning?
You know how, when you encouraged me to fight to save Dalinar, it still hurt you when I killed?
Yes.
It's like that, Kaladin said softly. He looked to the side. He was again gripping his spear too tightly. Syl watched him, hands on hips, waiting for him to say more. Something bad is going to happen, Kaladin said. Things can't just continue to be good for me. That's not how life is. It might have to do with those glyphs on Dalinar's wall yesterday. They seemed like a countdown. She nodded. Have you ever seen anything like that before?
I remember something, she whispered. Something bad. Seeing what is to come. It isn't of honor, Kaladin. It's something else. Something dangerous.
Wonderful. When he said nothing more, Syl sighed and zipped into the air, becoming a ribbon of light. She followed him up there, moving between gusts of wind. She said that she's honor spren, Kaladin thought. So why does she still keep up the act of playing with winds? He'd have to ask her, assuming she'd answer him. Assuming she even knew the answer. Toral Sadius laced his fingers before himself, elbows on the fine stonework tabletop as he stared at the shard blade he'd thrust down through the center of the table. It reflected his face. Damnation! When had he gotten old? He imagined himself as a young man in his 20s. Now he was 50. Storming 50! He set his jaw, looking at that blade. Oathbringer. It was Dalinar's shard blade, curved, like a back arching, with a hook-like tip on the end matched by a sequence of jutting serrations by the crossguard. Like waves in motion, peeking up from the ocean below. How often had he lusted for this weapon? Now it was his. But he found the possession hollow. Dalinar Kholin, driven mad by grief, broken to the point that battle frightened him, still clung to life. Sarius's old friend was like a favored axe-hound he'd been forced to put down, only to find it whimpering at the window, the poison having not quite done its work. Worse, he couldn't shake the feeling that Dalinar had gotten the better of him somehow. The door to his sitting room opened, and Iole slipped in. With a slender neck and a large mouth, his wife had never been described as a beauty, particularly as the years stretched long. He didn't care. Iole was the most dangerous woman he knew. That was more attractive than any simple pretty face.
"You've destroyed my table, I see," she said, eyeing the shard blade slammed down through the center.
She flopped down onto the small couch beside him, draped one arm across his back, and put her feet up on the table. While with others, she was the perfect Alethi woman. In private, she preferred to lounge.
"Dalinar is recruiting heavily," she said. "I've taken the opportunity to place a few more of my associates among the staff of his war camp."
"Soldiers?"
"What do you take me for?"
That would be far too obvious. He will have new soldiers under careful watch. However, much of his support staff has holes as men join the call to take up spears and reinforce his army. Sadeus nodded, still staring at that blade. His wife ran the most impressive network of spies in the war camps. Most impressive indeed, since very, very few knew of it. She scratched at his back, sending shivers up the skin. He released his proclamation, ELA noted. Yes. Reactions? As anticipated, the others hate it. Sadeus nodded.
Dalinar should be dead, but since he is not, at least we can depend upon him to hang himself in time.
Sadeus narrowed his eyes.
By destroying him, I sought to prevent the collapse of the kingdom. Now I'm wondering if that collapse wouldn't be better for us all.
What?
I'm not meant for this, love, Sadeus whispered. This stupid game on the plateaus. It sated me at first, but I'm growing to loathe it. I want war, Ile. Not hours of marching on the off chance that we'll find some little skirmish.
These little skirmishes bring us wealth.
Which was why he'd suffered them so long. He rose.
I will need to meet with some of the others. Aladar, Ruthar. We need to fan the flames among the other high princes, raise their indignation at what Dalinar attempts.
And our end goal?
I will have it back, ELA, he said, resting his fingers on Oathbringer's hilt. The conquest.
It was the only thing that made him feel alive any longer. That glorious, wonderful thrill of being on the battlefield and striving, man against man, of risking everything for the prize, domination, victory. It was the only time he felt like a youth again. It was a brutal truth. The best truths, however, were simple. He grabbed Oathbringer by the hilt and yanked it up out of the table.
Dalinar wants to play politician now, which is unsurprising. He has always secretly wanted to be his brother. Fortunately for us, Dalinar is no good at this sort of thing. His proclamation will alienate the others. He will push the high princes, and they'll take up arms against him, fracturing the kingdom. And then, with blood at my feet and Dalinar's own sword in my hand, I will forge a new Alethkar from flame and tears.
What if instead he succeeds?
That, my dear, is when your assassins will be of use.
He dismissed the shard blade. It turned to mist and vanished.
I will conquer this kingdom anew, and then Yakaved will follow. After all, the purpose of this life is to train soldiers. In a way, I'm only doing what God himself wants.
The walk between the barracks and the king's palace, which the king had started calling the pinnacle, took an hour or so, which gave Kaladin plenty of time to think. Unfortunately, on his way he passed a group of Dalinar's surgeons in a field with servants gathering knobweed sap for an antiseptic. Seeing them made Kaladin think not only of his own efforts gathering the sap, but of his father, Lirin. If he were here, Kaladin thought as he passed them, he'd ask why I wasn't out there with the surgeons. He'd demand to know why, if Dalinar had taken me in, I hadn't requested to join his medical corps. In fact, Kaladin could probably have gotten Dalinar to employ all of Bridge IV as surgeon's assistants. Kaladin could have trained them in medicine almost as easily as he had the spear. Dalinar would have done it. An army could never have too many good surgeons. He hadn't even considered it. The choice for him had been simpler. Either become Dalinar's bodyguards, or leave the war camps. Kaladin had chosen to put his men in the path of the storm again. Why? Eventually they reached the king's palace, which was built up the side of a large stone hill with tunnels dug down into the rock. The king's own quarters sat at the very top. That meant lots of climbing for Kaladin and his men. They hiked up the switchbacks, Kaladin still lost in thought about his father and his duty.
"That's a tad unfair, you know," Moash said as they reached the top.
Kaladin looked to the others, realizing that they were puffing from the long climb. Kaladin, however, had drawn in Stormlight without noticing. He wasn't even winded. He smiled pointedly, for Syl's benefit, and regarded the cavernous hallways of the pinnacle. A few men stood guard at the entrance gates, wearing the blue and gold of the King's Guard, a separate and distinct unit from Dalinar's own guard.
"Soldier," Kaladin said with a nod to one of them, a light eyes of low rank.
Militarily, Kaladin outranked a man like this, but not socially. Again, he wasn't certain how all of this was supposed to work. The man looked him up and down.
"I heard you held a bridge, practically by yourself, against hundreds of Parshendi. How'd you do that?"
He did not address Kaladin with sir, as would have been appropriate for any other captain.
"You want to find out?" Moash snapped from behind. "We can show you. Personally."
"Hush," Kaladin said, glaring at Moash. He turned back to the soldier.
"I got lucky. That's it."
He stared the man in the eyes.
"I suppose that makes sense," the soldier said.
Kaladin waited.
"Sir,"
the soldier finally added. Kaladin waved his men forward, and they passed the light-eyed guards. The interior of the palace was lit by spheres grouped in lamps on the walls. Sapphires and diamonds blended to give a blue-white cast. The spheres were a small but striking reminder of how things had changed. Nobody would have let Bridgman near such casual use of spheres. The pinnacle was still unfamiliar to Kaladin. So far, his time spent guarding Dalinar had mostly been in the war camp. However, he had made certain to look over maps of the place, so he knew the way to the top.
"Why did you cut me off like that?"
Moash demanded, catching up to Kaladin.
"You were in the wrong," Kaladin said. "You're a soldier now, Moash. You're going to have to learn to act like one, and that means not provoking fights."
"I'm not going to scrape and bow before Light Eyes, Cal. Not anymore."
"I don't expect you to scrape, but I do expect you to watch your tongue. Bridge Four is better than petty jibes and threats."
Moash fell back, but Kaladin could tell he was still smoldering.
"That's odd," Syl said, landing on Kaladin's shoulder again. "He looks so angry."
"When I took over the Bridgemen," Kaladin said softly, "they were caged animals who had been beaten into submission. I brought back their fight, but they were still caged. Now the doors are off those cages. It will take time for Moash and the others to adjust."
They would. During the final weeks as Bridgemen, they'd learned to act with the precision and discipline of soldiers. They stood at attention while their abusers marched across bridges, never uttering a word of derision. Their discipline itself had become their weapon. They'd learned to be real soldiers. No, they were real soldiers. Now they had to learn how to act without Sadius's oppression to push against. Moash moved up beside him.
"I'm sorry," he said softly.
"You're right."
Kaladin smiled, this time genuinely.
"I'm not going to pretend I don't hate them," Moash said. "But I'll be civil. We have a duty. We'll do it well. Better than anyone expects. We're Bridge Four."
"Good man," Kaladin said.
Moash was going to be particularly tricky to deal with, as more and more Kaladin found himself confiding in the man. Most of the others idolized Kaladin.
Not Moash, who was as close to a real friend as Kaladin had known since being branded.
The hallway grew surprisingly decorative as they approached the King's conference chamber. There was even a series of reliefs being carved on the walls, the heralds, embellished with gemstones on the rock to glow at appropriate locations.
"More and more like a city," Kaladin thought to himself. "This might actually be a true palace soon."
He met Scar and his team at the door into the King's conference chambers.
"Report?" Kaladin asked softly.
"Quiet morning," Scar said, "and I'm fine with that."
"You're relieved for the day, then,"
Kaladin said. I'll stay here for the meeting, then let Moash take the afternoon shift. I'll come back for the evening shift. You and your squad get some sleep. You'll be back on duty tonight, stretching to tomorrow morning.
Got it, sir,
Scar said, saluting. He collected his men and moved off. The chamber beyond the doors was decorated with a thick rug and large, unshuttered windows on the leeward side. Kaladin had never been in this room, and the palace maps, for the protection of the king, only included the basic hallways and routes through the servants' quarters. This room had one other door, probably out onto the balcony, but no exits other than the one Kaladin stepped through. Two other guards in blue and gold stood on either side of the door. The king himself paced back and forth beside the room's desk. His nose was larger than the paintings of him showed. Dalinar spoke with High Lady Navani, an elegant woman with gray in her hair. The scandalous relationship between the king's uncle and mother would have been the talk of the war camp if Sadeus's betrayal hadn't overshadowed it. Moash, Kaladin said, pointing. See where that door goes. Martin Eth, stand watch just outside in the hall. Nobody other than a high prince comes in until you've checked with us in here. Moash gave the king a salute instead of a bow and checked on the door. It indeed led to the balcony that Kaladin had spotted from below. It ran all around this upmost room. Dalinar studied Kaladin and Moash as they worked. Kaladin saluted and met the man's eyes. He wasn't going to fail again as he'd done the day before.
I don't recognize these guards, uncle, the king said with annoyance.
They're new, Dalinar said. There is no other way onto that balcony, soldier. It's 100 feet in the air.
Good to know, Kaladin said.
Dre, join Moash out there on the balcony. Close the door and keep watch. Dre nodded, jumping into motion.
I just said there's no way to reach that balcony from the outside, Dalinar said.
Then that's the way I'd try to get in, Kaladin said.
If I wanted to, sir.
Dalinar smiled in amusement. The king, however, was nodding.
Good, good.
Are there any other ways into this room, Your Majesty? Kaladin asked. Secret entrances? Passages?
If there were, the king said, I wouldn't want people knowing about them.
My men can't keep this room safe if we don't know what to guard. If there are passages nobody is supposed to know about, those are immediately suspect. If you share them with me, I'll use only my officers in guarding them.
The king stared at Kaladin for a moment, then turned to Dalinar.
I like this one. Why haven't you put him in charge of your guard before?
I haven't had the opportunity, Dalinar said, studying Kaladin with eyes that had a depth behind them, a weight.
He stepped over and rested a hand on Kaladin's shoulder, pulling him aside.
Wait, the king said from behind. Is that a captain's insignia? On a dark eyes? When did that start happening?
Dalinar didn't answer, instead walking Kaladin to the side of the room.
The king, he said softly, is very worried about assassins. You should know this.
A healthy paranoia makes the job easier for his bodyguards, sir, Kaladin said.
I didn't say it was healthy, Dalinar said. You call me sir. The common address is Brightlord.
I will use that term if you command, sir, Kaladin said, meeting the man's eyes.
But sir is an appropriate address even for a light eyes if he's your direct superior.
I'm a high prince.
Speaking frankly,
Kaladin said, he wouldn't ask for permission. This man had put him in the role, so Kaladin would assume it came with certain privileges unless told otherwise.
Every man I've ever called Brightlord has betrayed me. A few men I've called sir still have my trust to this day. I use one more reverently than the other, sir.
You're an odd one, son.
The normal ones are dead in the chasms, sir, Kaladin said softly. Sadeus saw to that.
We'll have your men on the balcony guard from farther to the side where they can't hear through the window.
I'll wait with the men in the hall, then. Kaladin said, noticing that the two men of the king's guard had already moved through the doors.
I didn't order that, Dalinar said. Guard the doors, but on the inside. I want you to hear what we're planning. Just don't repeat it outside this room.
Yes, sir,
Four more people are coming to the meeting, Dalinar said. My sons, General Call and Brightness Tashav, Call's wife. They may enter. Anyone else should be kept back until the meeting is over.
Dalinar went back to a conversation with the king's mother. Kaladin got Moash and Dre positioned, then explained the door protocol to Martin Eth. He'd have to do some training later. Light Eyes never truly meant, don't let anyone else in, when they said, don't let anyone else in. What they meant was, if you let anyone else in, I'd better agree that it was important enough or you're in trouble. Then Kaladin took his post inside the closed door, standing against a wall with carved paneling made of a rare type of wood he didn't recognize.
It's probably worth more than I've earned in my entire lifetime, he thought idly. One wooden panel.
The High Prince's sons arrived, Adolin and Renarin Colin. Kaladin had seen the former on the battlefield, though he looked different without his shard plate. Less imposing. More like a spoiled rich boy. Oh, he wore a uniform like everyone else, but the buttons were engraved, and the boots... Those were expensive hogshide ones, without a scuff on them. Brand new. Likely bought at ridiculous expense.
He did save that woman in the market, though, Kaladin thought, remembering the encounter from weeks ago. Don't forget about that.
Kaladin wasn't sure what to make of Renarin. The youth, he might have been older than Kaladin, but sure didn't look it, wore spectacles and walked after his brother like a shadow. Those slender limbs and delicate fingers had never known battle or real work. Syl bobbed around the room, poking into nooks, crannies, and vases. She stopped at a paperweight on the women's writing desk beside the king's chair, poking at the block of crystal with a strange kind of crab thing trapped inside.
Were those wings?
Shouldn't that one wait outside? Adolin asked, nodding toward Kaladin. What we're doing is going to put me in direct danger, Dalinar said, hands clasped behind his back. I want him to know the details. That might be important to his job.
Dalinar didn't look toward Adolin or Kaladin. Adolin walked up, taking Dalinar by the arm, and speaking in a hushed tone that was not so soft that Kaladin couldn't hear.
We barely know him.
We have to trust some people, Adolin, his father said in a normal voice. If there's one person in this army I can guarantee isn't working for Sadeus, it's that soldier.
He turned and glanced at Kaladin, once again studying him with those unfathomable eyes.
He didn't see me with the stormlight, Kaladin told himself forcefully. He was practically unconscious. He doesn't know. Does he?
Adolin threw up his hands but walked to the other side of the room, muttering something to his brother. Kaladin remained in position, standing comfortably at parade rest.
Yes, definitely spoiled.
The general who arrived soon after was a limber, bald man with a straight back and pale yellow eyes. His wife, Tashav, had a pinched face and hair streaked blonde. She took up position by the writing desk, which Navani had made no move to occupy.
Reports? Dalinar said from the window as the door clicked shut behind the two newcomers.
I suspect you know what you'll hear, Bright Lord, said Tashav. They're irate. They sincerely hoped you would reconsider the command, and sending it out to the public has provoked them. High Prince Hatham was the only one to make a public announcement. He plans to, and I quote, see that the king is dissuaded from this reckless and ill-advised course.
The king sighed, settling into his seat. Renarin sat down immediately, as did the general. Adolin found his seat more reluctantly. Dalinar remained standing, looking out the window.
Uncle? The king asked. Did you hear that reaction? It's a good thing you didn't go so far as you had considered, to proclaim that they must follow the codes or face seizure of assets. We'd be in the middle of a rebellion.
That will come, Dalinar said. I still wonder if I should have announced it all at once. When you've got an arrow stuck in you, it's sometimes best to just yank it out in one pull.
Actually, when you had an arrow in you, the best thing to do was leave it there until you could find a surgeon. Often it would plug the blood flow and keep you alive. It was probably best not to speak up and undermine the High Prince's metaphor, however.
Storms! What a ghastly image!
the king said, wiping his face with a handkerchief.
"Do you have to say such things, uncle?
I already fear we'll be dead before the week is out."
"Your father and I survived worse than this," Dalinar said.
"You had allies then. 3 high princes for you, only 6 against, and you never fought them all at the same time."
"If the high princes unite against us," General Call said, "we will not be able to stand firm. We'll have no choice but to rescind this proclamation, which will weaken the throne considerably."
The king leaned back, hand to his forehead.
"Jezereza, this is going to be a disaster!"
Kaladin raised an eyebrow.
"You disagree?"
Syl asked, moving over toward him as a cluster of fluttering leaves. It was disconcerting to hear her voice coming from such shapes. The others in the room, of course, couldn't see or hear her.
"No," Kaladin whispered. "This proclamation sounds like a real tempest. I just expected the king to be less, well, whiny."
"We need to secure allies," Adolin said. "Form a coalition. Sadeus will gather one, and so we counter him with our own."
"Dividing the kingdom into 2,
Tishav said, shaking her head.
"I don't see how a civil war would serve the throne, particularly one we're unlikely to win."
"This could be the end of Alethkar as a kingdom," the general agreed.
"Alethkar ended as a kingdom centuries ago," Dalinar said softly, staring out that window. "This thing we have created is not Alethkar. Alethkar was justice. We are children wearing our father's cloak."
"But uncle," the king said, "at least the kingdom is something, more than it has been in centuries. If we fail here and fracture to 10 warring princedoms, it will negate everything my father worked for."
"This isn't what your father worked for, son," Dalinar said. "This game on the shattered plains, this nauseating political farce, this isn't what Gavilar envisioned. The Everstorm comes."
"What?"
the king asked. Dalinar turned from the window finally, walking to the others and rested his hand on Navani's shoulder. "We're going to find a way to do this, or we're going to destroy the kingdom in the process. I won't suffer this charade any longer." Kaladin, arms folded, tapped one finger against his elbow.
"Dalinar acts like he's the king," he mouthed, whispering so softly only Syl could hear. "And everyone else does as well."
Troubling. It was like what Amaram had done, seizing the power he saw before him, even if it wasn't his. Navani looked up at Dalinar, raising her hand to rest on his. She was in on whatever he was planning, judging by that expression. The king wasn't. He sighed lightly.
"You've obviously got a plan, uncle. Well, out with it. This drama is tiring."
"What I really want to do," Dalinar said frankly, "is beat the lot of them senseless. That's what I'd do to new recruits who weren't willing to obey orders."
"I think you'll have a hard time spanking obedience into the High Prince's, uncle," the king said dryly.
For some reason, he absently rubbed at his chest.
"You need to disarm them," Kaladin found himself saying.
All eyes in the room turned toward him. Brightness Tishav gave him a frown, as if speaking were not Kaladin's right. It probably wasn't. Dalinar, however, nodded toward him.
"Soldier, you have a suggestion?"
"Your pardon, sir," Kaladin said.
"And your pardon, your majesty. But if a squad is giving you trouble, the first thing you do is separate its members. Split them up, stick them in better squads. I don't think you can do that here."
"I don't know how we'd break apart the High Princes," Dalinar said. "I doubt I could stop them from associating with one another. Perhaps if this war were won, I could assign different High Princes different duties, send them off, then work on them individually. But for the time being, we are trapped here."
"Well, the second thing you do to troublemakers," Kaladin said, "is to disarm them. They're easier to control if you make them turn in their spears. It's embarrassing. Makes them feel like recruits again. So, can you take their troops away from them, maybe?"
"We can't, I'm afraid," Dalinar said.
"The soldiers swore allegiance to their light eyes, not to the crown specifically. It's only the high princes who have sworn to the crown.
However, you are thinking along the right lines. He squeezed Nabani's shoulder. For the last 2 weeks, he said, I've been trying to decide how to approach this problem. My gut tells me that I need to treat the High Princes, the entire light-eyed population of Alethkar, like new recruits in need of discipline.
He came to me and we talked, Nabani said. We can't actually bust the High Princes down to a manageable rank, as much as Dalinar would like to do just that. Instead, we need to lead them to believe that we're going to take it all from them if they don't shape up.
This proclamation will make them mad, Dalinar said. I want them mad. I want them to think about the war, their place here. And I want to remind them of Gavilar's assassination. If I can push them to act more like soldiers, even if it starts with them taking up arms against me, then I might be able to persuade them. I can reason with soldiers. Regardless, a big part of this will involve the threat that I'm going to take away their authority and power if they don't use it correctly. And that begins, as Captain Kaladin suggested, with disarming them.
Disarm the High Princes? The king asked. What foolishness is this?
It's not foolishness, Dalinar said, smiling. We can't take their armies from them, but we can do something else. Adolin, I intend to take the lock off your scabbard. Adolin frowned, considering that for a moment. Then a wide grin split his face.
You mean letting me duel again? For real?
Yes, Dalinar said. He turned to the king. For the longest time I've forbidden him from important bouts, as the codes prohibit duels of honor between officers at war. More and more, however, I've come to realize that the others don't see themselves as being at war. They're playing a game. It's time to allow Adolin to duel the camp's other shard-bearers in official bouts.
So we can humiliate them? The king asked.
It wouldn't be about humiliation. It would be about depriving them of their shards. Dalinar stepped into the middle of the group of chairs. The High Princes would have a hard time fighting against us if we controlled all of the shard blades and shard plate in the army. Adolin, I want you to challenge the shard bearers of other High Princes in duels of honor, the prizes being the shards themselves.
They won't agree, General Call said. They'll refuse the bouts.
We'll have to make sure they agree, Dalinar said. Find a way to force them or shame them into the fights. I've considered that this would probably be easier if we could ever track down where Wit ran off to.
What happens if the lad loses? General Call asked. This plan seems too unpredictable.
We'll see, Dalinar said. This is only one part of what we will do. The smaller part, but also the most visible part. Adolin, everyone tells me how good you are at dueling, and you have pestered me incessantly to relax my prohibition. There are 30 shard-bearers in the army, not counting our own. Can you defeat that many men?
Can I? Adolin said, grinning. I'll do it without breaking a sweat, so long as I can start with Sadeas himself.
So he's spoiled and cocky, Kaladin thought.
No, Dalinar said.
Sadeas won't accept a personal challenge, though eventually bringing him down is our goal. We start with some of the lesser shard-bearers and work up. The others in the room seemed troubled. That included Brightness Nabani, who drew her lips to a line and glanced at Adolin. She might be in on Dalinar's plan, but she didn't love the idea of her nephew dueling. She didn't say so.
As Dalinar indicated, Nabani said, this won't be our entire plan. Hopefully, Adolin's duels won't need to go far. They are meant mostly to inspire worry and fear, to apply pressure to some factions who are working against us. The greater part of what we must do will entail a complex and determined political effort to connect with those who can be swayed to our side.
Nabani and I will work to persuade the High Princes of the advantages of a truly unified Alethkar, Dalinar said, nodding. Though the Stormfather knows I'm less certain of my political acumen than Adolin is of his dueling. It is what must be. If Adolin is to be the stick, I must be the feather.
There will be assassins, Uncle, Elokar said,
sounding tired.
"I don't think Carl is right. I don't think Alethkar will shatter immediately. The High Princes have come to like the idea of being one kingdom. But they also like their sport, their fun, their gem hearts. So they will send assassins. Quietly at first, and probably not directly at you or me. Our families. Sadius and the others will try to hurt us, make us back down. Are you willing to risk your sons on this? How about my mother?"
"Yes, you are right," Dalinar said. "I hadn't, but yes, that is how they think."
He sounded regretful to Kaladin.
"And you're still willing to go through with this plan?" the king asked.
"I have no choice," Dalinar said, turning away, walking back toward the window, looking out westward, in toward the continent.
"Then at least tell me this," Elokar said. "What is your end game, uncle? What is it you want out of all of this? In a year, if we survive this fiasco, what do you want us to be?"
Dalinar put his hands on the thick stone windowsill. He stared out as if at something he could see, and the rest of them could not.
"I'll have us be what we were before, son. A kingdom that can stand through storms. A kingdom that is a light and not a darkness. I will have a truly unified Alethkar, with high princes who are loyal and just. I'll have more than that."
He tapped the windowsill.
"I'm going to refound the Knights Radiant."
Kaladin nearly dropped his spear in shock. Fortunately, nobody was watching him. They were leaping to their feet, staring at Dalinar.
"The Radiance?" Brightness Tashav demanded. "Are you mad? You're going to try to rebuild a sect of traitors who gave us over to the Voidbringers?"
"The rest of this sounds good, father," Adolin said, stepping forward. "I know you think about the Radiance a lot, but you see them differently than everyone else. It won't go well if you announce that you want to emulate them."
The king just groaned, burying his face in his hands.
"People are wrong about them," Dalinar said. "And even if they are not, the original Radiance, the ones instituted by the Heralds, are something even the Vorin Church admits were once moral and just. We'll need to remind people that the Knights Radiant, as an order, stood for something grand. If they hadn't, then they wouldn't have been able to fall, as the stories claim they did."
"But why?" Elokar asked. "What is the point?"
"It is what I must do." Dalinar hesitated. "I'm not completely certain why yet, only that I've been instructed to do it. As a protection, and a preparation for what is coming. A storm of some sort. Perhaps it is as simple as the other high princes turning against us. I doubt that, but perhaps."
"Father," Adolin said, hand on Dalinar's arm,
"this is all well and good, and maybe you can change people's perception of the Radiance, but..."
"Ishar's soul, father. They could do things we cannot. Simply naming someone a Radiant won't give them fanciful powers like in the stories."
"The Radiants were about more than what they could do," Dalinar said. "They were about an ideal, the kind of ideal we're lacking these days. We may not be able to reach for the ancient surge bindings, the powers they had, but we can seek to emulate the Radiants in other ways. I am set on this. Do not try to dissuade me."
The others did not seem convinced. Kaladin narrowed his eyes. So did Dalinar know about Kaladin's powers, or didn't he? The meeting moved on to more mundane topics, such as how to maneuver shardbearers into facing Adolin, and how to step up patrols of the surrounding area. Dalinar considered making the war camps safe to be a prerequisite for what he was attempting. When the meeting finally ended, most people inside departing to carry out orders, Kaladin was still considering what Dalinar had said about the Radiance. The man hadn't realized it, but he'd been very accurate. The Knights Radiant did have ideals, and they'd called them that very thing. The Five Ideals. The immortal words.
"Life before death,"
Kaladin thought, playing with the sphere he'd pulled from his pocket. "Strength before weakness. Journey before destination."
Those words made up the first ideal in its entirety. He had only an inkling of what it meant, but his ignorance hadn't stopped him from figuring out the second ideal of the Windrunners, the oath to protect those who could not protect themselves. Syl wouldn't tell him the other three. She said he would know them when he needed to. Or he wouldn't, and would not progress. Did he want to progress? To become what? A member of the Knights Radiant? Kaladin hadn't asked for someone else's ideals to rule his life. He just wanted to survive. Now, somehow, he was headed straight down a path that no man had trod in centuries, potentially becoming something that people across Roshar would hate or revere. So much attention. Soldier? Delinar asked, stopping by the door. Sir, Kaladin stood up straight again and saluted. It felt good to do that, to stand at attention, to find a place. He wasn't certain if it was the good feeling of remembering a life he'd once loved, or if it was the pathetic feeling of an axe-hound finding its leash again. My nephew was right, Delinar said, watching the king retreat down the hallway. The others might try to hurt my family. It's how they think. I'm going to need guard details on Navani and my sons at all times. Your best men. I've got about 24 of those, sir, Kaladin said. That's not enough for full guard details running all day protecting all 4 of you. I should have more men trained before too long, but putting a spear in the hands of a bridgeman does not make him a soldier, let alone a good bodyguard. Delinar nodded, looking troubled. He rubbed his chin. Sir? Your force isn't the only one stretched thin in this war camp, soldier, Delinar said. I lost a lot of men to Sarius's betrayal. Very good men. Now I have a deadline. Just over 60 days. Kaladin felt a chill. The High Prince was taking the number found scrawled on his wall very seriously. Captain, Delinar said softly, I need every able-bodied man I can get. I need to be training them, rebuilding my army, preparing for the storm. I need them assaulting plateaus, clashing with the Parshendi, to get battle experience.
What did that have to do with him?
You promised that my men wouldn't be required to fight on plateau runs.
I'll keep that promise, Delinar said. But there are 250 soldiers in the King's Guard. They include some of my last remaining battle-ready officers, and I will need to put them in charge of new recruits.
I'm not just going to have to watch over your family, am I? Kaladin asked, feeling a new weight settling in his shoulders. You're implying you want to turn over guarding the king to me as well.
Yes, Delinar said. Slowly, but yes. I need those soldiers. Beyond that, maintaining 2 separate guard forces seems like a mistake to me. I feel that your men, considering your background, are the least likely to include spies for my enemies. You should know that a while back there may have been an attempt on the king's life. I still haven't figured out who was behind it, but I worry that some of his guards may have been involved.
Kaladin took a deep breath. What happened?
Elikar and I hunted a chasm fiend, Delinar said. During that hunt, at a time of stress, the king's plate came close to failing. We found that many of the gemstones powering it had likely been replaced with ones that were flawed, making them crack under stress.
I don't know much of plate, sir, Kaladin said. Could they have just broken on their own, without sabotage?
Possibly, but unlikely. I want your men to take shifts guarding the palace and the king, alternating with some of the king's guard to get you familiar with him and the palace. It might also help your men learn from the more experienced guards. At the same time, I'm going to start siphoning off the officers from his guard to train soldiers in my army. Over the next few weeks, we'll merge your group and the King's Guard into one. You'll be in charge. Once you've trained bridgemen from those other crews well enough, we'll replace soldiers in the guard with your men and move the soldiers to my army. He looked Kaladin in the eyes. Can you do this, soldier?
Yes, sir, Kaladin said, though part of him was panicking.
I can.
Good.
Sir, a suggestion?
You've said you're going to expand patrols outside the war camps, trying to police the hills around the shattered plains?
Yes.
The number of bandits out there is embarrassing. This is Alethi land now. It needs to follow Alethi laws. I have 1,000 men I need to train, Kaladin said. If I could patrol them out there, it might help them feel like soldiers. I could use a large enough force that it sends a message to the bandits, maybe making them withdraw. But my men won't need to see much combat.
Good. General Call had been in command of patrol duty, but he's now my most senior commander and will be needed for other things. Train your men. Our goal will eventually be to have your 1,000 doing real roadway patrols between here, Alethkar, and the ports to the south and east. I'll want scouting teams, watching for signs of bandit camps and searching out caravans that have been attacked. I need numbers on how much activity is out there and just how dangerous it is.
I'll see to it personally, sir. Storms. How is he going to do all of this?
Good, Dalinar said.
Dalinar walked from the chamber, clasping his hands behind him as if lost in thought. Moash, Eth, and Mart fell in after him, as ordered by Kaladin. He'd have 2 men with Dalinar at all times, 3 if he could manage it. He'd once hoped to expand that to 4 or 5, but storms, with so many to watch over now, that was going to be impossible. Who is this man? Kaladin thought, watching Dalinar's retreating form. He ran a good camp. You can judge a man, and Kaladin did, by the men who followed him. But a tyrant could have a good camp with disciplined soldiers. This man, Dalinar Kolin, had helped unite Alethkar, and had done so by wading through blood. Now he spoke like a king, even when the king himself was in the room. He wants to rebuild the Knights Radiant, Kaladin thought. That wasn't something Dalinar Kolin could accomplish through simple force of will. Unless he had help.